Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.
Rob Wolf, and welcome back to Unformidable, episode number 36, where we take a look at some of the less heralded Mets in our beloved franchise's quirky history, as every player who dons the orange and blue is, in their own way, unformidable. So welcome back. It's been a long time coming to get back behind the mic here. It's been a long, crazy time in New York and the world, and who would have ever thought that not having baseball would be about the 10,000th or millionth problem that we would all have? After suffering through just a fraction of the health and misery issues that my many fellow New Yorkers and tri-state area people have been, I am happy to just go ahead and do the Unformidable episode I was planning to do about a month ago, which was very spring training-centric. And I like to do theme-appropriate Unformidable episodes, but there's really nothing theme-appropriate I can think of, and no pandemic-related baseball analogies I can discuss. And of course, if we even get baseball this year, I imagine we'll have to have some kind of spring training, or summer training, or whatever we'll call it. But my plan as spring training wound down was to celebrate our, if you're a follower of Amazing Avenue, you're perhaps a follower or a fan of our annual King of Spring Training series, and I wanted to take that opportunity to acknowledge someone I like to think of as the original Mets King of Spring Training. Perhaps Met fans with even longer memories than I might have an even better suggestion, but for me, the King of Spring Training is, was, and always will be Darren Reed. If you remember the name, you're likely following the Mets rather zealously in the late 80s, or at least closely enough to care about spring training results. As I mentioned in one of our first Unformidable podcasts on David West, the late 80s was a halcyon time when the Mets, at least to young me, seemed to have a devil magic, or I thought of it as angel magic, that we currently attribute to just the Yankees and the Cardinals, where I actually expected everything to work out. And I just assumed that acquiring Darren Reed would be another in a line of brilliant Met acquisition development items that would lead to the continuation of this late 80s juggernaut that we were clearly building and would never ever end. None of that proved to be true, but Darren Reed had some memorable moments in Met uniform, even if most of them took place in March. Just for a little background, Darren Douglas Reed was born October 16th, 1965, in Ojai, California. Or is that Ojai? I don't know. O-J-A-I. I've driven past it, don't know how to pronounce it. Anyway, he was drafted by the Oakland Athletics in the 10th round of the 1984 January draft, did not sign, and was drafted by the New York Yankees in the third round of the June draft. His 85 and 86 seasons in the minors were pretty standard, but at age 21, in his third year in the minors in 1987, he really tore it up in mostly AA Albany Colony and also at AAA Columbus. Over the course of that season, in 1987, Darren Reed slugged .975, an OPS of .975. Pardon me, he didn't slug .975. That would have been he probably wouldn't have gotten traded at that point. But he put up an OPS of 975 across AA and AAA with 28 homers and 95 RBIs over 549 plate appearances. And lest you think he feasted on AA only when he was called up to Columbus late in the season, he was even better at AAA, hitting 8 homers in 86 plate appearances. So in the 1987 offseason, it was not without a modicum of excitement that on December 11th, 1987, the Mets acquired Darren Reed, along with Steve Fry and Phil Lombardi, from their crosstown rival New York Yankees for minor leaguer Victor Garcia, and at the time, the most notable name in the trade, and I guess looking at major league careers, the actual most notable name in the trade, Rafael Santana, starting shortstop for the 86 World Champions. Prospects, of course, weren't obsessively followed in that period of time the way they are today, I don't believe, but Reed was certainly gaining notice, and in fact, in the New York Times article in December of 87, discussing the rare trade between the two New York Major League franchises, it did note that the boss, George Steinbrenner, was quite concerned that Reed would become a slugger for his new team, the crosstown rivals that had eclipsed his petty little Bronx Bombers in the 80s. At the time, to me, it felt like just another savvy Met move, dealing from power with young Kevin Elster ready to take over full-time at shortstop, and sending away a light-hitting shortstop who was often replaced late in the game for offense, even in that 86 playoff run. And if you're thinking, you know, you're not going to get a valuable prospect for a light-hitting shortstop like that, well, you know, just before the 1987 season, we parlayed backup catcher Ed Hearn into David Cone, so yes, I had a probably not justified level of cockiness that our front office was smarter than even the New York Yankee front office, and that surely Darren Reed was going to be a star. Reed had decent speed to go with his power and was also known for an incredible outfield arm. He seemed like a quintessential potential five-tool player. An early Alex Ochoa, if you will. And now that I've said that name, I really need to do an unformidable on Alex Ochoa one day. But for a young outfield prospect joining an organization that at the time had Kevin McReynolds, Darryl Strawberry, Lenny Dykstra, Mookie Wilson, and Lee Mazzilli on the MLB roster had to be a bit daunting. So 1988 would be Reed's first year in the Met organization, and coincidentally would be the year that the Mets opened their spring training complex in Port St. Lucie, Florida. And Darren Reed took to Port St. Lucie right away. In fact, between 1988 and 1991 in spring training, Reed batted .337 with 7 home runs and 28 RBIs in spring training. And after one of his spring training blasts, legendary Met announcer Ralph Kiner once noted, "If Reggie Jackson is Mr. October and Dave Winfield is Mr. May, then Darren Reed is Mr. March." But with the Mets a win-now organization, with all of those stars on the roster, Reed never really broke through in 88, 89, 90, and never got to experience opening day as a Met, or in Major League Baseball, for that matter. He finally did get the call up to the majors in early 1990, making its Major League debut on May 1st, striking out as a pinch hitter in a 5-2 loss to the Braves. He got his first big league hit a week later at Shea Stadium, blooping a double off of Mark Thurmond of the Giants down the left field line, just out of the reach of a diving Kevin Mitchell, who we were probably already wishing we still had in left field instead of Kevin McReynolds. And there you go, already 2 years after acquiring Darren Reed, I had grown cynical about the Mets and their organization and their moves and their machinations. That turns quickly, my friends. Reed only spent 2 weeks with the team in May of 1990, garnering 2 starts and a few pinch-hitting appearances. I couldn't figure it out, but I'm presuming someone went on the DL, came off the 15-day DL, and Reed got sent back down. And if he was frustrated by the demotion and the lack of playing time in the majors, he took it out on AAA, pitching as he was returned to the Tides and continued to produce solid numbers. Still just 24, still potentially a prospect with a future. He hit .265 with 17 homers, 74 RBIs, and 16 stolen bases in 104 games in AAA. And again, just to note that strong arm, he had 19 assists from the outfield, largely in right field, in AAA. Reed did eventually get called back up in August and spent August through the end of the year as more or less the last man on the bench of a veteran team, making, unbeknownst to us fans, but knownst to us now, a last gasp run at glory, a last pennant run, as the 1990 Mets were embroiled in a pennant race, this time with the nascent Pittsburgh Pirates. Reed was on the bench as the Mets battled the Pirates, got to within 1.5 games of Pittsburgh after taking both games of a two-game series with the Pirates on September 12th and 13th, but that was as close as the Mets would get to catching Pittsburgh. The young player would actually struggle mightily as a pinch hitter, going 0-for-7 in his pinch hitting appearances down the stretch as the Mets watched the Pirates slowly pull away and clinch the division, rendering a final three-game series in Pittsburgh with the Pirates meaningless as the Pirates clinched the division a couple of days beforehand. Once the division was lost, Reed actually played every day and had his best little four-game burst as a Met, or perhaps in the majors, going 6-for-16 over those last four games, five of those hits being extra base hits, including his only home run as a Met in the season's final game at Shea Stadium against the Cubs, a 6-5 loss on September 30th of 1990.
This is Ezra Klein, host of the Ezra Klein Show podcast. In 2015, I asked Bill Gates what he was most afraid of, a pandemic respiratory flu, he told me. We're living in his nightmare now, so I had him back on the show to ask him, what has he learned? What do all of us need to learn? How far are we from a vaccine? And what does he hope for society on the other side of this crisis? What do we need to do to build something better in its aftermath? You can listen to our whole conversation by subscribing to The Ezra Klein Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, it's Jimmy Mondel. I'm the host of Speedrun, a new show on Quibi produced by the team at Polygon. Speedrun gives you your daily dose of the biggest gaming and entertainment news. Every weekday, we'll give analysis of the latest video games and highlight some of the best of the gaming community. We'll cover everything from the 20-year evolution of action role-playing games to the breakout success of Riot's new Valorant. For stories like this and much more, download the Quibi app to watch new episodes of Speedrun every weekday.
While 1990 might have been a lost year for Reed in the majors, not a particularly successful one, he did make his major league debut, and the future potentially looked brighter for him, or at least might lead to some opportunity, as one of the large reasons the 1990 marked the last year of the Met not-quite-dynasty is that it was pretty accepted knowledge at the end of the 1990 season that Daryl Strawberry was likely not going to re-sign with the Mets as a free agent, and the young Reed, as a right field prospect with power potential and a good arm, seemed like a logical possibility to replace him in 1991 out and right. Unfortunately for Darren, the Mets really went all in on the veteran presences in that 1990 offseason, which saw Daryl Strawberry sign with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Rather than entrust the role to a young player, you know, the Mets still saw themselves as contenders and signed Vince Coleman and Hubie Brooks, guaranteeing them both outfield spots and kind of leaving Reed on the outside looking in, coming into 91 once again in spring training without seeming to have a clear role on the team. However, as any true king of spring training would, Reed once again had a solid spring training in 1991 and felt like for once he was going to make the major league roster, at least, if not as a starter. And just days before the start of that 91 season, Reed got called into manager Bud Harrelson's office, expecting to receive news that he had made the opening day roster, only to learn that he had been traded just before the start of the season to the Montreal Expos. Unless you think I'm the only one who thought of Darren Reed as the king of spring training, the South Florida Sun Sentinel headline about the trade reads, in total, Mets deal spring phenom Reed to Expos. So it was noticed, Darren Reed's spring training successes. The full trade was Reed and infielder Al Diaz for outfielder Terrell Hanson and right-handed pitcher David Sommer, neither of whom, as far as I know, would even qualify for an unformidable. But if anyone out there has strong feelings about either of those prospects, please do let me know. From the Mets' perspective, Reed was out of options, and apparently the team brass, or enough of the team brass, preferred Mark Carrion to Reed as a backup outfielder option for the 91 team. And apparently Hanson was considered an outstanding prospect in the Montreal organization. He had himself put up Darren Reed-esque numbers in AA, 24 homers and 83 RBIs, although he peaked at AAA and never made it to play on the Mets. For Reed, though, it actually looked like it could be a good opportunity. The Expos acquired him with the intention of platooning him in right field with another young outfielder by the name of, unfortunately for Darren Reed, Larry Walker. At the time of the trade, Frank Cashin said, "I always said you put Darren Reed in an outfield and let him play regularly, he would be a good player. There just wasn't any room in this outfield," said the man who had just acquired Vince Coleman. But unfortunately for Reed, just days after the trade, he was back in his old hunting grounds of Port St. Lucie, where facing Met pitcher Alejandro Pena, this in his second spring at bat for the Montreal Expos, an errant pitch from Reed's former teammate hit him in the wrist, breaking it, and costing Reed the entire season. And as you might imagine, Larry Walker took that opportunity and ran with it as his Hall of Fame career got off to a solid start. Walker hit 290 for the season in 137 games, really kickstarting that Hall of Fame career. And when Reed was healthy and returned to the Expos the following spring, the opportunity for playing time that seemed there for about 1 or 2 days in spring training of 1991 had simply vanished. And you know what Darren Reed did in response? He took his frustration out on opposing pitchers in spring training, what he did best. In 92 spring training with the Expos, Darren Reed hit 4 homers, had 8 RBIs, and 33 spring at-bats, putting himself back in conversation for a role on the big league roster. An injury caused him to miss opening day, but he eventually made it back to the Expos and the majors in May. Unfortunately, he struggled, hitting 173 over 42 games with the Expos, and eventually had a standoff with Expos management when they wanted to reassign him to the minors, and Reed did not want to report, which led the organization to trade him to the Minnesota Twins on August 31st, 1992. After his 42 games and 81 at-bats with the Expos in 92, Reed appeared in 14 more games for the Twins from August 31st to the end of the year, garnering 33 more Major League at-bats. Those would sadly be the last Major League at-bats Reed would log in his Major League career, though it would not be the end of his journey as a Major League player or with a Major League organization. As he would come full circle and come back into the Met organization. The Mets reacquired Reed before the 93 season with Jerry Hunsicker, then the vice president for baseball operations, saying that he would be a needed power source off the bench. So Reed came back home, well, not his original home, but I'll always think of as his home, with the Mets, And this time in 1993, he had a very nondescript pedestrian spring training. Perhaps doing the opposite would work. Perhaps he decided to do the George Costanza, do the opposite, and he'd finally have a stellar regular season. I don't know. But just before the end of spring training, on March 28th, during a game against the Braves at West Palm Beach, Reed fatefully caught his cleats in the batter's box, starting towards first base on a spring training hit, and injured his hamstring very badly. Eventually it was discovered that he tore the hamstring tendon completely, although that was not discovered right away. Reed spent the entire 93 season rehabbing this torn hamstring, and of course the Mets had a horrible 1993, as we have covered in many unformidables and has been covered in books by people more eloquent than I. But at any rate, Dallas Green, a managerial pinhead who replaced Jeff Torborg, also a managerial pinhead, after the 93 team lost 25 of their first 38 games, didn't buy the severity of Reed's injury, which sounds very fitting in a Dallas Green, crabby, angry old white dude, old school way, and rode Reed very hard. And according to an interview with Reed, he and Dallas Green actually got into a fight at one point that Jerry Hunsicker had to break up. But that hamstring injury cost Reed all of 1993, and perhaps no surprise, after all of that kerfluffle, Reed did not come back to the Met organization, but he did have one last March ride in 1994. He signed with the Pittsburgh Pirates in the offseason and went 3-for-10 in spring training with the Pirates over 9 games. All 3 of those hits, home runs. But it wasn't enough to make the team, and Reed was reassigned to the Pirates minor league camp on March 19th, so he wasn't going to make the major league roster. And his leg problems resurfaced. He began the year on the DL in Buffalo in the Pirates organization, and then later in the year he re-injured himself stepping into a hole, and the Pirates released him after that DL stint. Reed tried to fight his way back. He finished 1994 in the Mexican League and spent 1995 in AAA Richmond in the Braves organization, and 1996 in the independent Northern League, where he tried to reinvent himself as a third baseman, but he ruptured his Achilles while playing in the Northern League and finally decided to call it a career. And for that career, Reed appeared in a total of 82 Major League games, 26 of them at the New York Met, 42 for the Montreal Expos, and 14 for the Minnesota Twins in 1990 and 1992. Losing 91 and a lot of other years around there or afterwards, largely to injury and lack of opportunity. Overall, he had a batting average of 183 with 6 home runs and 16 runs batted in. He recorded a negative 0.7 WAR, according to Baseball Reference, in his 153 major league at-bats, hitting 183. Having a 606 OPS and a 68 OPS plus. And he actually had his best numbers as a Met in 1990 in those 39 at-bats, largely thanks to that four-game stretch once the season was decided at the end of 1990. He hit 205 as a Met, 262 on-base percentage, 463 slugging, good for a 698 OPS and an 89 OPS plus, and a 0.4 WAR. His brief time in Montreal and Minnesota was even less productive, although obviously and unfortunately for Darren Reed, very small sample size. That was a career. And who knows, I suspect he probably wouldn't have been quite the elite prospect some of those numbers showed if there was more scrutiny and more coverage of the minor leagues, but probably in a different organization that wasn't top-heavy and star-driven and trying to win pennants year after year in the mid to late 80s into 1990, Reed might have gotten more of an opportunity and might have been able to show more in a large sample size before injury got in his way. Despite appearing in only 82 major league games, Reed did play 791 minor league games. He hit 281 with 90 homers and 381 RBIs. Just never quite got the chance or never developed beyond that quadruple A player, or we'll never quite know. He even pitched one inning for the Richmond Braves in 1995 in Triple A, did not give up a run, so that strong arm never went away either, at least while he was playing baseball. After his retirement, Reed bought 150 acres of land in Kentucky and got into farming, but the injuries that started in his athletic career continued to dog him, and at the age of 51, he had to undergo a pretty dangerous dual hip replacement surgery, which he fortunately recovered from. He did eventually lease out the property, move back to California with his wife Gloria and his son Hunter, although he does hope to return to Kentucky one day. Darren Reed unfortunately never got the opportunity to shine in the major leagues, but he did get his proverbial cup of coffee, and he and we will always have Port St. Lucie and his wonderful spring training exploits and the promise, the hope that they once represented. And hopefully we'll all have spring training or some form thereof as soon as it's reasonably safely possible to have it again. Thank you, as always, for listening to Unformatable. Please go to amazonavenue.com for more Mets-related content. Follow Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find this and all of our amazing pods wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe, leave us a review. It really helps. Original music by Bunga. I'm on Twitter at WolfRR, WOLFFRR, and the show is at Unformatable. Thank you, be safe, and sometime soon, let's go Mets.
Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.